A bright, glowing light heralds the arrival of a beautiful white-winged horse that gallops out of the clouds and freezes with its wings outstretched. TriStar Pictures presents... A Gary Foster production, a Nora Ephron film. In Chicago, a man and his 8-year-old son stand in a graveyard, next to an elegant casket with a huge floral arrangement on top of it.
Mommy got sick. And it happened just like that. There's nothing anybody could do. It isn't fair. There's no reason. But if we start asking why, we'll go crazy.
An aerial view shows mourners gathered on the other side of the grave and city skyscrapers towering in the distance. As guests are leaving the wake, they pass 8-year-old Jonah sitting on the front steps of the family home. His father, Sam, is staring out of the kitchen window. Sam's sister Susie holds up 2 Tupperware containers.
5 minutes in the microwave, any one of them, 5 minutes in, done. Ready to eat.
She glances at husband Greg.
Do you know how to make juice?
Sam turns round, lost in thought.
Microwave, 5 minutes.
Susie and Greg exchange worried looks. Sam, a tall, charismatic man with short, dark, curly hair, is working on architectural plans at his drawing desk in an open-plan office. Sam's bearded colleague approaches and pulls out a business card.
Here. My shrink. Colin.
Sam throws down his pen, pulls a pile of business cards out of his suit jacket pocket, and waves them at his colleague.
Loss of spouse, support group. Chicago Cancer Family Network. Parents without partners, partners without parents. Hug yourself. Hug a friend. Hug a shrink. Or work. Work hard. Work will save you. Work is the only thing that will see you through this.
Sam's colleague looks on helplessly. Sam lowers his greeny-gray eyes.
Don't mind him. He's just a guy who's lost his wife.
Sam sinks down into a chair.
What I think we really need is change.
Good idea. Take a couple of weeks off, get some sun, take Jonah fishing.
Sam shakes his head.
No, real change. A new city. Some place where every time I go around a corner, I don't think of Maggie.
Sam remembers walking towards Wrigley Field Sports Arena with Maggie and Jonah. Maggie, slender and attractive with short auburn hair, gives Sam a high five.
Where are you going to go?
Thinking about Seattle.
At the airport.
Eventually, in a few months, you'll start seeing women. You'll meet someone.
Right, right. Move on, right. That's what I'm gonna do. And then in a few months, boom, I'll be fine. I'll just grow a new heart.
Sam, I'm sorry.
She didn't mean that.
I know. Look, it just doesn't happen twice.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh.
In deep black space, a star-like spot of light appears in the east, and the name Tom Hanks appears next to it. A dimmer, blinking light travels towards it like an aircraft on the move in the night sky. Another star appears in the west with the name Meg Ryan, and a third star labeled Sleepless in Seattle. Other stars appear, labeled with the names of the cast. The labels fade, but the lights remain. Bill Pullman, Ross Malinger, Rosie O'Donnell, Gabby Hoffman, Rita Wilson, Victor Garber, Carey Lowell, Barbara Garrick, Diana Ivey, David Hyde Pierce, and Jay Reiner. Jealousy and hate. A map of the United States spreads out beneath the starry sky. A colourful patchwork of different states with sections of the east and west coast in bold relief as if rendered in thick oil paint. Story by Jeff Arch. Screenplay by Nora Ephron, David S. Ward and Jeff Arch. Produced by Gary Foster and directed by Nora Ephron. The images fade, leaving a lone shooting star streaking across a dark sky.
As time goes by.
Baltimore, 11 months later. A slim, pretty woman with her long blonde hair worn in a French plait emerges from a quayside townhouse with a fair-haired man. They load bags of presents into two cars.
The tall one with red hair is your cousin Irene.
You recognize her by the disappointed look on her face.
I was married to Harold, who ran off with his secretary.
But came back because Irene threatened to put the dog to sleep if he didn't.
Your brother Dennis is Professor Johns Hopkins. He was married to, Betsy.
The most competitive woman in the world.
I don't see how I'm going to remember all this.
Oh, well, Walter, you will.
Walter and his girlfriend pull up in separate cars outside a large detached white house with Christmas lights twinkling. They get out and start to unpack. Walter gives a little wave.
Your Uncle Milton lost all of his money.
And some other people.
In a pyramid scheme. Don't mention the IRS or the federal prison system. Your mother's Barbara, your father's Cliff.
My father has electric trains.
Really?
She goes up the steps.
Am I what they had in mind?
Oh, Walter, they're gonna love you.
She kisses him on the cheek.
Everybody, Annie has an announcement.
Oh, yeah. Walter and I are engaged.
Annie's father, Cliff, kisses her cheek. Relatives around the dinner table lean over to shake Walter by the hand. Walter shakes hands with Cliff and Annie's brother, Dennis, then starts to sneeze.
Bless you.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you all right?
It's nothing.
Maybe it's the flowers.
I'll get it.
We'll move.
Good idea.
No, don't touch. I feel terrible sneezing at a time like this.
This is a very important moment for me.
He's allergic to everything. Don't worry about it.
Bees. I'm allergic to bees.
Harold is allergic to every type of bee. We always have to carry a hypodermic of adrenaline wherever we go.
If he eats even one tiny piece of a nut.
My head swells up like a watermelon and I drop dead.
It's the same with Harold and bees.
Your mother and I had salmon at our wedding, and I really think that a wedding without cold salmon is...
I'm not allergic to salmon.
Oh, he's not allergic to salmon.
I don't think. But you never know.
You never know.
Harold wasn't always allergic to bees.
Oh, honey, what a shame. We had some champagne, and what did we use it for?
Uncle Milton's parole, and it was delicious.
It was, wasn't it, Milton?
When are you getting married, Annie?
In early June, in the garden.
Does it have to be in the garden?
Well, what about Harold and bees?
I'm allergic to bees.
We'll spray you.
Cold salmon, a lovely cucumber salad, strawberries.
I'm afraid I am allergic to strawberries.
Is this all right with you, Walter?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man face of the earth.
The Lou Gehrig line. Remember, Dad, the Lou Gehrig line from
Pride of the Yankees.
Yeah, yeah.
It's baseball. Historical reference.
I would like to propose a toast.
Here.
To my kid sister.
To Walter and my baby.
To Walter and Annie.
Everyone clinks glasses. Annie kisses Walter.
Everyone, please eat before it gets cold.
Later, upstairs, Barbara unwraps her silk wedding dress.
Here it is. The Historical Society wanted this, and I never would give it to them.
Oh, Mom.
I notice these things are back in fashion.
Grandmother's dress.
Oh, honey. Oh. He's a lovely man, Annie.
I know. He is wonderful, isn't he? And he's such a wonderful athlete.
Are his folks nice?
You'll love them. We're going down to D.C. tonight to be with them Christmas morning.
How did it happen?
Silly, really. I mean, I'd seen him at the office. Obviously, I'd seen him. He's the associate publisher. And then one day, we both ordered sandwiches from the same place, and he got my lettuce and tomato on whole wheat, which, of course, he was allergic to. And I got his lettuce and tomato on white.
How amazing.
It is, isn't it? You make a million decisions that mean nothing, and then one day, you order takeout, and it changes your life.
Destiny takes a hand.
Mom. Destiny is something we've invented because we can't stand the fact that everything that happens is accidental.
Then how do you explain that you both ordered exactly the same sandwich except for the bread? How many people in this world like lettuce and tomato without something else like tuna?
Annie puts the dress on.
It wasn't a sign. It was a coincidence.
I was in Atlantic City with my family. Cliff was a waiter. He wasn't even supposed to work that night, and suppose he hadn't. He asked me to take a midnight walk on the steel pier. I've probably told you this a million times, but I don't care. Then he held my hand. At one point, I looked down and I couldn't tell which fingers were his and which were mine. And I knew.
What?
You know.
What?
Magic. It was magic.
Magic?
I knew we'd be together forever. And that everything would be wonderful. Just the way you feel about Walter. Walter. It's quite a formal name, isn't it?
Barbara picks up a veil.
One of the things I truly knew was that your father and I were going to have a wonderful time in the sack, I believe you call it.
Mom!
Of course, it took several years before everything worked like clockwork in that department. So don't be worried if it takes a while.
Well, we are ready.
Fine. Fiddle-dee-dee. How's it working?
Like clockwork.
Oh, honey.
It rips under the armpit.
It's a sign. You don't believe in signs.
Annie and Walter leave the house and saunter down the steps arm in arm.
They loved you. I told you they would love you, and they loved you.
I love you.
I love you, Walter. Did anyone ever call you anything other than Walter?
Nope.
Not even when you were young?
Nope, not even when I was young. You sure you don't want to drive with me?
Oh, well, how will I get back to Baltimore on Friday? I forgot the present. Walter, I left your stepmother's present inside by accident. I swear, when we're old and gray, you're going to have to remind me to put my teeth in. I'll be walking all over town, smacking my gums together and not even noticing.
I'll wait.
You'll wait. Oh, right. No, don't wait, Walter. Really, it's silly. You go ahead. We're late anyway. I'll be 10 minutes behind you.
Walter goes on his way. Annie is driving along the motorway in her white sedan, singing along to carols on nighttime radio, heading for Washington.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle...
Horses, welcome horses, back horses, to you horses. And your emotions. Nothing I'm Dr. Marcia Fieldstone, broadcasting live across America from the top of the Sears Tower in Chicago. Tonight, we're talking about wishes and dreams. What's your wish this Christmas Eve?
What's your
maybe
wish?
The best present
my
you can
wish
give yourself
is to
is a
turn
call
the radio
to me.
Station.
The number in Chicago.
The subject of this evening's medical update is you and your spleen. And your host is
not
Dr.
Not on your life.
Coming up, Jingle Bells Backwards. Sung by the New Jersey Kate Mayettes. Seattle, go ahead.
Hello, this is Jonah.
No last names, Jonah. You sound younger than our usual callers. How old are you?
I'm 8.
8? How come you're up so late?
It's not that late in Seattle.
Oh, of course, you're absolutely right. All right, what's your Christmas wish, Jonah?
It's not for me, it's for my dad. I think he needs a new wife.
Oh, you don't like the one he has now?
He doesn't have one now. That's the problem.
Where's your mom?
She died.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Well, who can believe this?
I've been pretty sad, but I think my dad's worse.
Have you talked to your dad about this?
No.
Why not?
It's like it makes him sadder.
Oh, I can understand that. Joan, is your dad home right now?
Yeah.
What's he doing? Is he busy?
Not really. He's out on the deck.
Well, I'm sure that I can help, but I'm going to need you to help me help him. So
wretched
what I want you to
woman.
Do is bring your daddy
hang
to the
up,
phone.
Jonah. Don't listen to her.
No way. He'd kill me.
Trust me, Jonah. He won't be angry when he realizes how concerned you are about him.
Oh, run a
bet. Okay, but if I get yelled at, I'm never going to listen to your show again.
Okay, fair enough.
Jonah finds Sam.
Dad?
Yeah?
There's someone on the phone for you.
His name's Sam.
Sam? If you've just tuned in, this is Dr. Marcia Fieldstone, and tonight's topic is your wishes and dreams.
Yeah, I got it.
And we're on the line now with someone from Seattle.
Hello.
Hello, Sam. This is Dr. Marcia Fieldstone on Network America.
Okay, what are you selling tonight? Is it micro-hibachis or the Ginza knives?
No, I'm not selling anything. I just want to help. I want you to know that your son called, and he asked me for some advice on how you might find a new wife.
Who is this?
Dr. Marcia Fieldstone of Network America, and you are on the air.
You called the radio station?
Sam. Sam? Sam, are you with me?
Yeah. Yes.
Your son feels that since your wife's death, you've been very, very unhappy. And he's genuinely worried about you.
Oh, hey, get out here. Get out here. Come on, now, I'm not going to go through this alone.
I think it's very hard for him to talk to you about all this. And I thought maybe you and I could talk. It would make Jonah feel a little better. Sam?
Talk to her, Dad. She's a doctor.
Of what? Her first name could be Doctor.
Please?
Sam. Sam. It's his Christmas wish.
Okay.
Okay, good.
And he's listening.
Now, I know this is difficult, but how long ago did your wife die?
About a year and a half ago.
Oh. Have you had any relationships since?
No.
No? Why not?
Marcia, or should I call you Dr. Fieldstone?
Dr. Marcia.
Dr. Marcia. I don't mean to be rude.
Oh, and I don't want to invade your privacy.
Oh, sure you do.
Go on, Sam. I'm listening.
And he smiles.
Sam.
We had a pretty tough time there at first.
Mm-hmm.
But we're dealing with it. And Jonah and I will get along just fine again as soon as I break his radio.
Jonah's on the extension.
I have no doubt that you're a wonderful father. You know, you can tell a lot from a person's voice.
You certainly can.
But something must be missing if Jonah still feels that you're under a cloud. And just a few questions. Are you sleeping at night?
He doesn't sleep at all.
How do you know that?
I live here, Dad.
Look, it's Christmas.
Sam sits next to Jonah on a wooden bench. Christmas lights twinkle nearby.
Maggie, my wife, she really did it. She loved it. She made everything beautiful.
And he's moved.
Yeah, it's just tough this time of year. I mean, any kid needs a mother.
Could it be that you need someone just as much as Jonah does?
Sam looks at Jonah, and he's misty-eyed.
Yes. Don't answer that. Let's get into that right after these messages. Sam, Jonah, don't go away. If you've just tuned in, we're talking to Sleepless in Seattle, and we'll be right back after this break with your listener response.
What is she talking about?
This is when other people get to call in and dump on what you said.
Oh. Get Stainimator, and I promise. Well, this is really fun. And
pulls up outside the Capitol Diner and goes in. The waitresses are listening to the radio show.
I bet he's tall with a cute butt.
Bet he hasn't bathed in weeks and he stinks.
Harriet, shut up.
Hi, can I help you?
Tea with the bag out. You know, maybe I'll just hustle myself out to Seattle, give him a little gift for New Year's Eve.
Yeah, you go on out there if you want to. But don't open his refrigerator. They don't cover anything when they put it in the fridge. They just stick it in there and leave it till it walks out by itself.
What I'm saying is I wouldn't kick this guy out of my bed for eating crackers. You know what I'm saying?
65 cents.
Let's take a call before we get back to Sleepless.
Ooh, 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 ooh,
Knoxville, Tennessee, you're on the air. Talk to me.
Yes. I would just like to know where I could get this man's address.
Hmm. Honey, get in line.
On the air.
Hmm.
Next caller, go ahead, Oakland.
Annie carries her tea out to the car.
If there was one question I was allowed to ask.
Oh, go ahead.
People who truly loved once are far more likely to love again. Sam, do you think that there's someone out there you could love as much as your wife?
Well, Dr. Marcia Fieldstone, I think that's hard to imagine.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to get out of bed every morning. Breathe in and out all day long. And then after a while, I won't have to remind myself to get out of bed in the morning and breathe in and out. And then after a while, I won't have to think about how I had it great and perfect for a while.
Sam, tell me what was so special about your wife.
Well, how long is your program?
A tear glistens on Annie's cheek.
Oh, well, it was a million tiny little things. That when you added them all up, it just meant that we were supposed to be together. And I knew it. I knew it the very first time I touched her. It's like coming home. Only to know home I'd ever known. I was just taking her hand to help her out of a car. And I knew it. It was like
magic.
Well, folks, it's time to wrap it up. I'm Dr. Marcia Fieldstone in Chicago. And to all my listeners, a magical and merry Christmas. And to you, sleepless in Seattle, we hope you'll call again soon and let us know how it's going.
Oh, you count on it.
Sam puts the phone down. Annie pulls up outside a handsome mansion in Washington. Jonah has fallen asleep with his head in Sam's lap. Sam plays with his son's dark hair.
The bluebirds fly.
A stately yacht with its masts, boom and rigging covered in golden fairy lights glides gently over Lake Union, passing Sam and Jonah's white clapboard house, which is built on a floating wooden jetty. Annie's working in the newsroom of the Baltimore Sun. She joins her friend and lifestyle editor Becky in a meeting with two male reporters.
This man sells the greatest soup you've ever eaten, and he is the meanest man in America. I feel very strongly about this, Becky. It's not just about the soup.
Do it. What else?
New Year's Eve. Please don't make me write it.
Listen to this. Phone service in the greater Chicago area was tied up for 2 hours Christmas Eve when some kid calls a phone-in radio show and says that his dad needs a new wife. 2,000 women call the station asking for the guy's number.
Jesus.
I heard it. This kid calls up and says my dad needs a wife. And this shrinkette practically forces the guy onto the phone and says, do you want to talk about it? And he says, no, as a matter of fact, I don't. And then suddenly, for no reason at all, he starts to talk about how much he loved his wife and how he just fell in love with her, like he was one of those cows in Michigan.
What cows in Michigan?
It was on 60 Minutes. There were those cows that got zapped by stray voltage. No one knows why. And maybe it was Wisconsin. But anyway, I was listening to him talk about how much he loved his wife, and suddenly I was crying. It's like what happens when I watch those phone company ads. I don't have to see the whole thing, just the part where the daughter gives the mother the refrigerator with a big red bow on it.
Yes, the Polaroid commercial. 2 5-year-olds at their grandfather's birthday party.
They're making the album.
Oh, with all the glue. That kills me.
Keith and Wyatt share a mystified look.
You should write something about this.
About what?
Whatever it is.
I'll tell you what it is. 2,000 women calling a radio station for a husband. There are a lot of desperate women out there looking for love.
Especially over a certain age.
You know, it's easier to be killed by a terrorist than it is to get married over the age of 40.
That is not true. That statistic is not true.
That's right. It's not true. But it feels true.
It feels true because it is true.
There's practically a whole book about how that statistic is not true.
Calm down. You brought it up.
I did not, Wyatt. Did you even read that book?
Did anybody read that book all the way through?
Are you two finished? Fine, now, where were we?
If someone is a widower, why do they say that he was widowed? Why don't they say he was widowered?
Becky shoots Annie a look.
I was just wondering.
What was that about up there?
What was what?
What's with you?
Nothing's with me.
Something's with you.
What are you saying?
Whatever it is, you can tell me. Sleepless in Seattle?
That's what she called him on the show because he can't sleep.
And now 2,000 women want his number. The guy could be a crackhead, a transvestite, a flasher, a junkie, a chainsaw murderer, or someone really sick. Someone like my Rick.
Actually, he sounded nice.
Oh? Oh, really? Now we're getting down to it.
Please, Becky, I'm madly in love with Walter. He did the craziest thing the other night. What was that?
Becky's unimpressed.
Oh, it's so funny. We were hysterical. What was that?
Annie leans on her hand and frowns. Annie and Walter are dancing together at a black tie New Year's Eve party. The ballroom is decorated with balloons and streamers.
You know, I'm thinking, I've got to go up to Boston for the AAB convention, right? And then I got to visit Winston Hughes about switching over our computers. But why don't we meet in New York? Valentine's Day weekend.
Walter, I'd love to.
We can stay at the plaza.
Ice skate in Central Park.
Register.
Register.
Yeah, traditions, glasses, silver. Everything.
He puts her through some dance moves.
How about it?
A
I'll take you to Chinatown for dim sum.
Does it have weed in it?
I don't think so.
Walter holds her in his arms and sways to the beat.
Dim sum, dim sum, doo-dee-doo-ba.
Annie looks a little uncertain. Everyone in the room turns to watch a screen showing the glittering ball at the top of the Times Tower.
Hey, John. Wake up, man. The ball's cracked.
Jonah flops back onto his sofa cushion. Sam looks at the screen, then at his sleepy son. He tosses a party blower onto the coffee table and lifts Sam into his arms.
It's okay.
Jonah has his arms looped about Sam's neck, his head with its mop of glossy dark hair resting on Sam's shoulder. Sam carries Jonah upstairs into his spacious bedroom. There's a glowing fish tank, a basketball lying on the carpet, school bags and an electric keyboard. Sam lays Jonah gently down on the bed, next to a framed picture of Maggie on the bedside table, and pulls the duvet over him.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
He passes Jonah his teddy.
Kiss Howard.
Good night, Howard.
Jonah closes his eyes. Sam looks down at him and lovingly strokes his son's fringe back from his forehead before going out, turning off the lights, and heading downstairs alone.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song.
Sam heads out onto the deck, leans on the railing and gazes across the lake at fireworks lighting up the night sky on the far shore.
When our love was new, and each kiss an inspiration,
exploding in golden starbursts.
But that was long ago.
Sam wanders back into the dimly lit living room. He fetches himself a bottle of beer and pours some into a glass, then settles down on the sofa and turns off the television, tossing the remote back onto the coffee table.
When stars are bright.
Sam stares into space for a moment, then lies back on the sofa, folds his arms and closes his eyes. Maggie brushes past the sofa in a cream satin dress.
Paradise where roses bloom.
Can I have half your beer?
Sure, go ahead.
She perches on the end of the sofa.
What did I used to say? Here's looking at you. Here's mud in your eye.
Here's to us.
She gives a half smile.
You used to say, here's to us.
Maggie's smile fades. Sam stares searchingly into her lovely face.
Oh, babe, I miss you so much, it hurts.
Maggie looks back at him with her soulful brown eyes. Sam blinks, unwilling to lose eye contact. When he opens his eyes, she's gone. Sam's thoughtful.
What do you want to do?
We'll tell him. We'll tell him when he gets here.
You want to tell him?
I don't mind telling him.
Hey, she's here.
She's back.
He has another idea.
No, come on, Sam.
Claire, how are you? I'm so glad you're here. I heard you on the radio. I told everyone about it.
Oh, we already knew.
Well, how did
Grace?
The dispatcher? All of Seattle knows.
I was brushing my teeth, and suddenly there you were. I just couldn't believe my ears. I called my mother in Las Vegas. I said, Mother, turn on the radio. That's my architect. You know, it is so nice when a man can express his feelings.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, I wish I could express my feelings.
Yeah. So, Claire, is there a problem?
I was just tossing and turning last night. You know what that's like, Sam, because I realize I'm never going to fit my platters in that refrigerator we ordered. And when I get parties, I always put in platters. So I thought I would get the Sub-Zero refrigerator instead, and the only problem...
We have to re-roof all the cabinets.
We'll be into this wall.
Yeah, that's a bearing wall.
That's a delay, Claire, of
12 weeks.
I don't mind. The important thing is to get it right.
Absolutely.
Your words. Well, I've got a rush. La decorateur calls. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Sam's on-site colleague, Jay.
Well, this is fate.
She's divorced. We don't want to redo the cabinets, and you need a wife. What do they call that when everything intersects?
The Bermuda Triangle.
Sam hurries down the jetty to his house under a big umbrella. A postman is standing in the porch with Jonah, delivering big bundles of mail.
And there's another one. And you got room for one more here? There you go. They're right there.
Look at this, Dad. They're all for you.
Yes, sir. There you go.
Sam puts down his brolly and receives an armful of letters.
Sleepless in Seattle, care of Dr. Marcia Fieldston.
If you're having trouble sleeping, you might want to try drinking a glass of water from the other side.
I thought that was for hiccups.
Does it work for hiccups?
For hiccups, take a spoonful of sugar and hold it in your mouth for a minute.
Really?
Thank you.
In the house.
What possessed you to give them our address?
They called and asked for it. Dear Sleepless in Seattle, you're the most attractive man I ever laid ears on.
Wait. They called. How did they get our number? Oh, let me guess. You gave it to them.
You have to give them your phone number. They won't let you on the air. Dear Sleepless in Seattle, I live in Tulsa. Where's that?
It's in Oklahoma. Do you know where Oklahoma is?
Somewhere in the middle.
I'm not even going to think about what they're not teaching you in school. I'm not going to think about it. Yeah, somewhere in the middle. And generally speaking, I think we should rule out anyone that doesn't live near here.
She's willing to fly anywhere.
Sam grabs the letter.
Well, she looks like my third grade teacher. I hated my third grade teacher. Wait a minute. She is my third grade teacher.
Sam smiles.
Aren't you going to read any of these?
No, because this is not how it's done. I'd much rather just see somebody I like and get a feeling about them. And
he serves dinner.
Ask them if they want to have a drink.
Or a slice of pizza.
Not dinner, not necessarily on the first date, because halfway through dinner, you could be really sorry you asked them to dinner. Whereas if it's just a drink, if you like them, you can always ask them to dinner. But if not, you can just say, well, that was great. And then you go home. You see what I mean?
He puts a plate down in front of Jonah.
I wonder if it still works this way.
It doesn't. They ask you.
I'm starting to notice that.
If you get a new wife, I guess you have sex with her, huh?
Sam spits out toothpaste.
I certainly hope so.
Will she scratch up your back?
What?
In the movies, women are always scratching up the men's back and screaming and stuff when they're having sex.
How do you know this?
Jed's got cable.
Oh, just... Hand me that towel behind you.
Jonah rinses his mouth and hands Sam a towel.
Thank you.
I need it too.
Here, let me get yours.
Oh, whoa!
Jed's got cable. Come on. Another
brand. Walter and Annie sit on either side of the bed in their night things with their backs to one another and go through their nightly routine, passing bottles of water and tissues back and forth with a practiced air as Walter cleans and primes his humidifier. Later, Annie turns to look at Walter asleep beside her. He has a tissue tucked into his pajamas, which drapes across his nose, rising and falling with each breath. She turns away from him, pushes back the covers and gets up.
When the sun is high in the afternoon sky, you can always find something to do.
Annie comes down the stairs, pulling on her crimson toweling dressing gown and tying back her long hair. She walks into the kitchen, which is decorated in pale pinks and mint greens, switches on the light and sighs.
In the wee small hours of the while the whole wide world is fast asleep.
She opens the fridge door and stares in, then glances over her shoulder at the radio and shuts the door.
About the boy.
She leans against the fridge, staring at the radio, then saunters over and switches it on. She sits and listens whilst peeling an apple.
Welcome back to the best of Dr. Marcia Fieldstone, clinical psychologist and the friend you never had. Remember Marooned in Miami?
He says he doesn't love me anymore.
Why would you want to be with someone who doesn't love you?
Disappointed in Denver.
Every time I come close to orgasm, he goes to make himself a sandwich.
Why don't you make him a sandwich beforehand?
Sleepless in Seattle.
Well, I'm going to get out of bed every morning.
And he's transfixed.
Breathe in and out all day long. Then after a while, I won't have to remind myself to get out of bed. Breathing it out. And then after a while, I won't have to think about how did great and perfect for a while.
Sam, tell me what was so special about your wife.
Well, how long is your program?
Annie smiles and puts down the apple.
Oh, well, it was a million tiny little things. And when you added them all up, it just meant that we were supposed to be together, that's all. And I knew it. And I knew it the very first time I touched her. It was like coming home. Only to know home I'd ever known. I was just taking her hand to help her out of a car.
Annie's eyes fill with tears.
It was like magic.
Annie shakes her head emotionally. Next morning, Annie pulls up outside the Peabody Library. She walks briskly through the main hall and goes into her brother Dennis's office at the back. She marches up to his desk and throws down her coat.
Well, I think I'm going crazy, Dennis. I really do. Are you happily married?
What?
I mean, why did you get married? Was it all trumpets and fireworks and...
I got married because Betsy said we had to break up or get married. So we got married.
But when you first met her, did you believe that she was the only person for you, that in some mystical, cosmic way it was fated?
Annie, when you're attracted to someone, it just means that your subconscious is attracted to their subconscious, subconsciously. So what we think of as fate is just two neuroses knowing they're a perfect match.
She sits down on a piano.
I don't even know him. I am having all of these fantasies about some man I have never even met who lives in Seattle.
It rains 9 months of the year in Seattle.
I know. I do not want to move to Seattle.
She crosses the room and sits.
But what I really don't want to do is end up always wondering what might have happened and knowing I could have done something. What do you think?
He opens his mouth.
It's just cold feet, isn't it? Everybody panics before they get married. I mean, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yes, you did. Thank you very much, Dennis. I feel so much better just having blown this off.
Anytime.
Sam and Jay.
Sandy has a girlfriend, Glenda. She's a weightlifter. Well, and it's not like her neck is bigger than her head.
Oh, no. I'm not asking you to set me up. That's the one. I don't need your help with that. I just want to know what it's like, you know, out there.
That's what I'm trying to tell you, what women are looking for. Pecs and a cute butt.
Well, you mean like he has the cutest butt?
Yeah.
Where did I hear that recently?
Everywhere. I mean, you can't even turn on the news nowadays without hearing about how some babe thought some guy's butt was cute. Who the first woman to say this was, I don't know, but somehow it caught on.
So how's my butt?
Jay stops walking, lifts up Sam's jacket, and takes a look.
Not bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it cute, though? I don't know. Are we grading on a curve?
At the counter of the Athenian Inn...
When's the last time you were out there?
Jimmy Carter, 1978.
Things are a little different now. First, you have to be friends. You have to like each other. Then your neck. This could go on for years. Then you have tests, and then you get to do it with a condom. The good news is you split the check.
I don't think I could let a woman pay for dinner.
Great. They'll throw a parade in your honor. You'll be man of the year in Seattle Magazine.
Jay lifts his beer.
Tiramisu.
What is tiramisu?
You'll find out.
Well, what is it?
You'll see.
Some woman is going to want me to do it to her, and I'm not going to know what it is.
You'll love it.
Sam's seafood arrives.
Oh, this is going to be tough. Tough. This is going to be much tougher than I thought it was going to be.
About that decorator on the Bennett job?
Victoria.
Yeah, she's pert.
Oh, I no, I don't know.
Oh,
no, that's, I'm waved. No, I'm far away from now.
No.
I'm just assembling notes. I'm not going to...
Notes.
How would I do that?
What do you mean, how do you do it? You call her up. You say, come on, let's get together. We'll look at swatches.
Call her on the phone. Say, come, let's look at swatches.
Yeah, you know, color schemes.
She's not going to see right through that.
Oh, you don't do it like I do it. You do it in your own suave way. Think Cary Grant.
Cary Grant.
Think
would
Cary
call
Grant.
Up and say, come over and
hello.
Look at my swatches.
How do you know? Maybe he did.
He didn't.
I know he didn't do
no
it in a movie.
I Gunga Din. He didn't call.
No,
up
Gunga
Din.
Din is not a swatch kind of movie.
Why?
But who knows what he did in real life?
Oh, but he did that with Diane Cannon. Oh yeah, sure.
Hello, Diane. Take a look at these swatches.
Sam walks down the wooden jetty to the front door of his house, a cream umbrella shielding him from the driving rain. He leaves the umbrella in the porch and steps inside, switching on the light and walking into the open-plan living space and kitchen diner with its pale wooden floors and beamed ceiling.
Jonah, I'm home.
He puts his keys and briefcase down and pulls off his coat.
Hey, Jonah!
He hangs his coat on the back of a chair, wanders over to the stairs and peers up.
Jonah?
He goes upstairs and into Jonah's room.
Hey, Jonah! Hey, Jonah!
An egg-shaped chair turns round. Jonah's inside with a girl.
Hi, Dad. This is Jessica.
He has a portable record player.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Jessica.
Dad, this is amazing. If you play this backwards, it says Paul is dead.
Yeah, I know.
How do you know?
Sam shrugs.
Dad, could you shut the door?
Sure.
H and G.
Sam cocks his head.
Hi and goodbye.
They turn the chair round again. A little mystified, Sam goes out, shutting the door. Then cautiously steals the door open again, leaving it ajar. Sam backs slowly away from the door and heads downstairs. Alone in the living room, with the rain lashing against the windows, Sam looks back up the stairs with a thoughtful expression, then lowers his head and walks purposefully into his office space. He flicks on a couple of desk lamps and throws his Rolodex down next to the telephone.
I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend.
Sam finds an address in the Rolodex and steps back. He flexes his arms and snatches up the telephone receiver.
Back in the saddle again.
Sam dials.
Riding the range once more.
He sways nervously from foot to foot, waiting for a reply.
Where you sleep out every night and
the Victoria? This is Sam Baldwin. I don't know if you remember me, but... Oh, great. Hi. I was wondering if you would like to have a drink with me. Dinner would be even better. Oh, Friday would be great. Yeah. I hear that's a good place. 7:30 would be fine, and I'll meet you there. Okay, all right. It's Friday at 7:30 for dinner. Great. Me too. Bye.
Becky's at Annie's watching an affair to remember on video, typing a letter.
Are you in love with him?
I'm not now.
Now, those were the days when people knew how to be in love.
You're a basket case.
They knew it. Time, distance, nothing could separate them because they knew it was right. It was real. It was
a movie. That's your problem. You don't want to be in love. You want to be in love in a movie. Read it to me.
Becky has a drink and a bowl of crisps.
Dear Sleepless and Son, I have never written a letter like this in my life.
That's what everyone writes at the beginning of letters to strangers.
I know that. You think I don't know that?
What about Walter?
Walter. Oh, I would give anything to marry Walter. He's so unexpected. You think you can tell what he's like by just looking at him, but you can't.
Becky rolls her eyes.
I should write something in this about magic.
What?
Something. What if I never meet him? What if this man is my destiny and I never meet him?
Your destiny can be your doom. Look at me and Rick.
Will you name the place?
I want to meet you.
How about the top of the Empire State Building?
On the top of the Empire State Building.
Oh, yes, that's perfect.
Sunset, Valentine's Day.
The 102nd
floor.
I'll be in New York with Walter. I can squeeze it in. I'll be in New York with Walter.
Annie pulls the letter out of her typewriter, screws it up and throws it on the sofa. Becky picks it up and puts it by her side.
Do you want to hear about destiny? If I hadn't married Martin, I never would have bought the house with the dead tree, on account of which I got divorced. On account of which I hit a car and met Rick while buying a neck brace.
Wait a minute. You never told me you got a divorce because of a dead tree.
The tree man.
My father drank beer.
Fell in love with the tree man?
I did not say love.
He was a beard.
Did I say love?
Later in the day,
this is my favorite part.
Becky's close to tears.
It's now or never.
Never is a frightening word.
We'd be fools to let happiness pass us by.
Mm-hmm. Becky and Annie mouth her response.
Winter must be cold for those with no warm memories.
They start to cry.
We've already missed the spring.
Yeah. Well, it's probably my last
Men never year. Get this movie.
I know.
Jonah calls out in the night. Sam hurries up to his room.
It's okay. I'm here.
Dad!
I'm coming. It's all right. It's okay. It's okay.
Jonah is sweaty and tear-streaked.
It's okay. What was that about, huh?
It was sinking.
What was?
A house. There was water coming in all the windows.
Oh. Well, it's okay now. It's all right. So what should we do? Your mother used to sing to you when you had bad dreams. And...
Bye bye, Blackbird.
Yeah.
I miss her. What do you think happens to someone after they die?
I don't know.
Like, do you believe in heaven?
I never did. The whole idea of an afterlife, but now I don't know. So I have these dreams about your mom. And we have long talks about you, how you're doing. Which she sort of knows, but I tell her anyway. So what is that? That's sort of an afterlife, isn't it?
I'm starting to forget her.
Sam gives his son a big comforting hug, then sits up again and looks down at Jonah with a little twinkle in his eye.
She could peel an apple in one long, curly strip. The whole apple.
Jonah smiles. Sam gently brushes Jonah's damp fringe out of his eyes.
I love you, Jonah.
I love you, Dad.
Becky drops Annie off on the wet cobblestone street outside her townhouse and drives off with a wave.
See you tomorrow.
Annie gazes up at the stars in the sky. Sam comes out onto the deck of his floating house on the lake. He wraps a scarf around his neck and leans on the railings, looking out over the dark, rippling water.
No one seems to love.
In Baltimore, Annie strolls down beside the marina, the street lamps shining off the wet pavements. She sits on a bench at the end of the dock, draws her knees up under her chin, and stares out across the water. In Seattle, Sam meanders off the deck onto a small landing stage and sits on one of two wooden chairs at the end, gazing at the lake. Two lonely people sitting under the same night sky. Annie's at her desk in the newsroom.
Lori? Hi, it's Annie. Fine, I'm fine. Listen, I'm doing an article on call-in radio shows. Do you know anyone who works for someone named Dr. Marcia Fieldstone? I'm a writer for the Baltimore Sun and a friend of Lori Johnson's. I'm doing a piece on how people handle bereavement, and I understand you had a caller the other night, some guy from Seattle.
Annie dials another number.
This is Jonah Baldwin. We're not in right now, but you can leave.
Baldwin.
A message comes up on Annie's computer. Welcome to the Nexus City News Bureau news search. Enter your request. Annie types in, find Samuel Baldwin. It comes up with 216 Samuel Baldwins found. Strike Y to print out or enter factors. Annie types, find Samuel Baldwin, Jonah Baldwin. Samuel Baldwin, Jonah Baldwin found. Information from the Chicago News Service appears. Deceased Baldwin, Margaret Abbott, beloved wife of Samuel, mother of Jonah. June the 10th funeral, 10 a.m. Thursday, Church of the Heavenly Rest. Annie pauses, then types, "Find Samuel Baldwin, Chicago." Four are found. Samuel Baldwin arrested for grand larceny. Samuel Baldwin, alderman, convicted of accepting bribes. Samuel Baldwin, architect, Bull City Plaza. Samuel Baldwin, record holder in javelin. Architect. Annie underlines the word architect and presses enter. She types out a fax to the AAA Detective Agency, Seattle, Washington. Background check, including photo needed, on Samuel Baldwin, Seattle architect. Return confidential. In Seattle, tall, trendy babysitter Clarice is sprawled on the sofa with Jonah watching TV. As Sam comes in, she alerts Jonah, who switches channels.
Okay, Clarice, I'm going to be back either by midnight or 8:30 if disaster strikes. Here's one for the both of us.
A letter.
The number of the restaurant where I'm going to be at. If there's any problem, here's the number of the pediatrician. It's right above the phone. Now, here's a bottle of Ipecac. If anybody drinks poison, it's right here next to the juice glasses.
Fine.
How do I look? How do I look?
Great.
Huh? Do I look okay? Do I look all right?
I look stupid. I look stupid. I look like I'm trying too hard. I was going to get a haircut, but then I just look like I got a haircut.
This is a good letter, Dad.
Look, the heels on these shoes are grotesque. I look like I'm trying to be tall. Why am I trying
to
be tall?
Annie.
I'm already tall.
Annie Reed.
Now I'm late. Bye.
Dad, read this. Read this.
Jonah hands Sam the letter.
Dear sleepless and son, I've never, blah, blah, blah. I've been an excellent third baseman for as long as I or anyone else can remember. And while we're on the subject, let's just say right now that Brooks Robinson was the best third baseman ever. It's important that you agree with me on that because I'm from Baltimore.
He thinks Brooks Robinson's the greatest. So do you.
Everyone thinks Brooks Robinson is the greatest.
It's a sign.
Come here. I'll show you a sign. Here's a sign. All right.
He pulls down a roller map.
Where is Seattle? Right. Where is Baltimore?
It's right there. Look, 1, 2, 3, 4, but there's like 26 states between here and there. Now, that's a sign. I'm out of here. Goodbye. Good night. I love you.
Jonah's reading the letter. Sam comes back in.
Clarice, did you move your car?
Huh?
Sam's waiting in a booth at the Dahlia Lounge restaurant, piling up sugar cubes. Victoria's shown to the table.
Thank you, Derek.
You're welcome.
I'll have a...
white wine spritzer?
Yes.
And you, sir?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. Hi.
Hi.
You look good.
You look good yourself.
Sam tidies the sugar and cruet set away and straightens his knife and fork.
I thought you were never going to call me.
You did?
I really wanted you to, and I thought you were never going to.
Excuse me, Mr. Baldwin.
Yes?
There's a phone call for you.
Sam looks worried.
Excuse me.
Victoria, pink suit and curly bobbed hair, watches Sam hurry to the phone.
Thank you. Hello.
Dad, can we go to New York City for Valentine's Day?
What?
Annie Reed from Baltimore wants to meet us at the top of the Empire State Building on Valentine's Day.
Jonah.
What?
Have you fallen down? Are you bleeding? Is Clarice there? Has she been strangled?
No.
So this is the only reason for this phone call?
If we book now, we can get an excursion fare. Jessica's parents are travel agents, and Jessica says...
I'm not going to have this conversation right now. We will talk about it at a later time. I can't believe this conversation has lasted this long. You go to bed.
Victoria is putting away her powder compact as Sam slides back into the booth. She smiles.
Everything all right?
Oh, yeah. Do you have kids?
No.
You want mine? I will have an absolute straight up, please.
Sir...
A detective on the balcony takes snapshots of Sam and Victoria, who has her back to him. Sam is photoed feeding Victoria a morsel of food and she returning the favour. Sam and Jonah are by a crab stall in Pike Place Market. Jonah picks up a crab.
Hey, put that down! Stop it! There she is.
Victoria with bags of groceries.
Why is she bringing those groceries?
She's going to cook something for us, so be prepared.
Hi, Sam. Thanks. Thanks. And let me guess, you must be Jonah.
Jonah waves glumly.
Hi.
So this is it?
Yeah.
The car's down this way.
Great.
Sam and Victoria clear the table.
She's on her sixth painter, and we're never going to finish this job.
Now she wants the fireplace re-bricked.
Oh, I know her pretty well. I could give her a call.
No, I've got it solved. I'm just going to hit her with one of those fireplaces.
Jonah rolls his eyes.
Oh, that is so funny. You are so funny.
If she wants anything done, she goes to this whole song and dance about, oh, I don't know, I'm stupid. You tell me. You know better than I would, but couldn't we just flip the house around so that everything on one side is now on the other and everything in the back is now in the front? And could the whole front of the house open up on one great big hinge and that way I could just get in with the garage door open? I said, well, yeah, we can do that. We're just going to have to...
move the kitchen cabinets.
Sam's modestly flattered. He glances over at Jonah, who's still slumped at the table.
Hey, Jonah, bring some of that stuff around, all right?
Do you like baseball?
Yes, I do. In fact, my firm has box seats to the Mariners. Why don't we all go sometime?
Hey!
What about camping?
What about it?
Do you like camping?
I went camping once.
You know what, Dad? We ought to start camping more often.
You're right. Camping is good. Time for bed.
It's only 10 o'clock.
Yeah, 10 o'clock. Time for bed.
Good night.
Jonah marches to the stairs.
Well, hey, don't you want to thank Victoria for this delicious dinner?
Thanks for dinner. I never saw anybody cook potatoes that way.
He gives a fake grin and goes.
I'm glad you liked it. Good night, Jonah.
Yeah, we don't see a lot of potatoes around here. We're rice men.
Victoria rests her head on Sam's shoulder. That night, Jonah sneaks down the stairs in his pajamas and spies on his dad and Victoria out on the deck. Jonah peers over the back of the sofa and sees Victoria lean up and kiss Sam on the lips. Jonah's eyes widen in alarm and he crawls quickly away across the floor. He pulls the telephone receiver off the kitchen wall and dials rapidly. Annie and Walter are fast asleep in bed, Walter's humidifier emitting a cloud of vapour on the bedside table. The phone rings. Walter struggles up. Annie wakes and flings out her arm, whacking him in the face.
I'm sorry, Walter.
Annie switches on the bedside lamp and grabs the phone.
Hello.
Turn on your radio.
What?
The kid is on. You've got me listening to this garbage. Go, turn it on.
Who is it?
It's Becky. She's having trouble with Rick again. I'll go downstairs, Becky. I'll call you back.
She turns off the light.
I'm sorry, Walter. Are you bleeding?
Annie clambers out of bed. Walter flops back against the pillows. Walter blows his nose and flings the tissue away. Annie runs downstairs, pulling on her dressing gown. In the kitchen, she turns on the radio and grabs the phone.
It's outside kissing her right this minute.
Oh, really? Jonah, tell the truth. Are you spying on your father?
Who's he kissing right this minute?
Shh, listen to this.
I have to make them stop.
Do you think this
How
is
am I going to explain this to Walter?
She picks up the portable radio and hides in the broom cupboard.
Here for a year.
Jonah, it's good that your father's dating. It's just hard on you. It's something that you think you want, but then when it actually happens, it scares you.
That's not true.
Okay, now think. Shouldn't your father be the judge of whether someone is right or wrong for him?
He's not sane enough to judge anything. Now he's kissing her on the lips. She's a hoe. My dad's been captured by a hoe. What am I going to do?
Calm down, Jonah. Calm down. Tomorrow morning, when you're sitting down to breakfast with your dad, tell him how you feel. It's not good to keep your feelings inside you.
Jonah puts down the phone and yells. Walter finds Annie.
Miss Scarlett in the broom closet with the radio.
Walter, you scared me. Don't ever do that again.
Annie clambers out of the cupboard, Jonah and Sam.
Black Widow spider.
You scared me to death. You scared Victoria to death.
It was right over there.
Well, the next time you think you see a Black Widow spider, I want you to say, Dad, excuse me, but I believe a poisonous insect is in the house and I will calmly come and take care of it. You scream like that again, I'll kill you.
Becky heard this guy on the radio. She was sure it was Rick. She was completely hysterical. And then it turned out the guy lived in Duluth. Where is Duluth?
That doesn't make any sense.
I know, Walter. It doesn't make any sense at all. Thank God my life is in place.
Duluth, that's in North Dakota.
Annie lies awake in bed, Walter sleeping by her side. In Seattle, Jonah lies awake too. He rolls over with a sigh. Next day, Jonah's in Jessica's kitchen while she reads Annie's letter.
I love this letter. You have to write to her.
You think so?
It's YOH.
Yeah.
What's that?
Your only hope.
Holding Annie's letter, Jessica gazes at Jonah. At work, Annie lingers outside Becky's office, then sidles in and slips into a chair facing Becky across her desk.
I thought I would look into doing a story on those radio shows.
You'd probably have to go somewhere to really look into it.
Definitely.
Annie strolls out of the office and glances over her shoulder at Becky, who keeps a straight face. Jessica puts a letter in the mailbox and Jonah puts the flag up for collection. They sit on Jessica's steps and wait for the postman. In Baltimore, Walter and Annie arrive at the Colonial Club.
Couldn't you do a phone interview?
Not for the kind of piece I want to do. I won't be in Chicago that long.
When you get back, I'll be gone.
And then I'll see you in New York.
I'll get it.
The colorful map of the United States appears, showing a plane flight from east coast to west.
This is Captain Browning, and we're at our cruising altitude of approximately 35,000 feet. Weather looks clear to the west, and we expect to arrive in Seattle on schedule.
A passenger turns to Annie.
Don't you hate flying?
Yes, I do. I just told the most terrible one to the man I'm about to marry. Do you feel that any lie is a betrayal?
I said flying.
See Victoria off at SeaTac Airport in Seattle.
Thanks for bringing me out here.
Oh, well, he likes the planes.
Can I bring something back for you? A souvenir? Is he like those little snow globes? You know, you shake them up and then the snow floats down?
Sure, I'd really like that. Thank you so much.
Jonah swings on a barrier rail. Victoria looks upset.
He's 8.
He's good at it.
I read an article about this. All children are hideous at the age of 8. It's quite normal.
Well, maybe when I come back, the two of us ought to spend some time together on our own. What do you think?
Sam gives an encouraging smile.
Bye. Bye, Jonah.
Bye.
As she turns away, Jonah pretends to gag.
Jonah, listen to me. You don't know Victoria. I hardly know her myself. She is a fag, a mystery to me. She tosses her hair a lot. Why does she do this? I have no idea. Is it a twitch? Does she need a haircut? Should she use a beret to keep her hair out of her face? These are things I'm willing to get to the bottom of. And that is why I am dating her. That's all I'm doing. I'm not living with her. I'm not marrying her. Can you appreciate the difference?
Jonah's sheepish.
This is what single people do. They try other people on and see how they fit. But everybody's an adjustment. Nobody's perfect. There's no such thing as a perfect.
At that moment, Annie walks out of a gate into the arrivals lounge and stops near Sam to get her bearings. Sam is instantly struck by her looks and poise. He watches her intently as she walks by. Annie is unaware of him.
Come on.
He walks after her, Jonah hurrying to keep up.
Dad, I was talking to Jessica about reincarnation. She says you knew Annie in another life.
Who's Annie?
The one who wrote us. But Jessica says you and Annie never got together in that life. So your hearts are like puzzles with missing pieces. And when you get together, the puzzle's complete.
God damn it.
The reason I know this and you don't is because I'm younger and pure. So I'm more in touch with cosmic forces.
Who told you this stuff?
Jessica.
Well, I sincerely hope you're not marrying Jessica.
Sam has lost sight of Annie. He guides Jonah out of the airport. Annie drives along a motorway into the city.
I remember the days.
Driving along, Annie wrestles with a large street map.
In sleepy towns.
She turns onto Western Avenue and heads up a hill past the Seattle Space Needle, a tall, thin tower with a flying saucer-shaped observatory on top.
Well, you can't have a dream and cut it to fit.
Annie parks on Westlake Avenue, crosses the road and walks down the wooden jetty to Sam's house on the water. Her dark blonde hair is gathered in an attractive knot at the nape of her neck and she's wearing a pretty brown raincoat. She pauses at the front door.
By the railroad track.
Distracted by an engine noise, she steps back onto the wooden jetty and walks around the house to investigate. She sees Sam and Jonah pulling away across the lake in a little motorized dinghy. Annie jumps back into the red rental car and drives away from the marina along a lakeside road and over a bridge, following the dinghy as it skims across the water, heading for Alki Beach Park. She pulls up as Sam and Jonah's dinghy heads into the shore and gazes out of the window at them.
Give me a wink and a smile.
Annie breaks out of her reverie by shaking her head. She does a U-turn and parks on the other side of the road, in front of a white clapboard corner store closed out of season.
We go together like a wink and a smile.
Annie takes refuge behind the store, peeking out from behind the wall and watching Sam and Jonah play on the beach with a football. She smiles, wisps of blonde hair blowing across her face as Jonah tries to get past Sam and score a touchdown. Sam sweeps him off his feet and gently spins him around.
Just the sound of your voice, the light in your eyes.
Sam picks Jonah up and they wave their hands in the air in celebration, having a great time. Annie watches with a tender expression, charmed by the purity and innocence of father and son at play.
We go together like a wink and a smile.
All too soon, Jonah and Sam are back in the dinghy heading home. Annie's face falls as she watches them go, Jonah waving a red fabric fish. Later, Annie calls Becky from her motel.
I watched him play with his son at the beach.
Could you talk to him?
Couldn't do it. How did I get here?
You told a lie and got on a plane.
That's not what I mean. I'm going back over there tomorrow and talk to him. I am.
Okay. Good. Goodbye.
Beck.
What?
Is this crazy?
No. That's the weirdest part about it.
Annie smiles.
Thank you. I love you.
I love you too.
Good night.
Annie puts the phone down and flops back on the bed. Next day, Annie drives down to Lake Union Marina in the red rental car and parks opposite on Westlake Avenue. She looks out across the road and sees Sam and Jonah pull into the marina car park in a silver 4x4. Annie, who's wearing a light blue suit and her soft brown raincoat, gets out of the car with a bold, hopeful gleam in her eyes. She waits for a break in the traffic and starts to cross the busy road, heading for the car park, but stops in her tracks when she sees a young woman with bobbed curly hair approaching Sam and Jonah. Jonah races across the gravel and flings his arms around the lady's neck. Sam's not far behind. Sam gives his sister Susie a big hug. Annie watches in dismay.
It's so good to see you. Where's Greg?
A lorry heading for Annie. Annie starts and jumps back out of the way. Alerted to the near accident, Sam walks forward and stops at the edge of the road, staring wonderingly at Annie. Annie stares back wordlessly, cars whizzing past between them.
Hello.
Hello.
A taxi driving towards Annie skids to a halt just in time. Annie flies home.
So then what happened?
So then I left, obviously.
You were standing in the middle of the street?
You know that dream when you're walking down the street naked and everyone is looking at you?
I love that dream.
That was nothing compared to this humiliation. Nothing.
But he saw you, right?
He saw me.
You were face to face.
He said hello.
He said hello, and what did you say?
All I could say was hello.
Oh, my God.
An affair to remember.
And all I could say was, hello.
It's a sign.
It's a sign that I have watched this movie too many times.
Oh, Annie.
So stupid. From the minute I listened to that stupid program on the radio, I've been a complete jerk.
You are not a jerk.
Thank you. Idiot.
You don't know who she was, Annie.
I saw her. I have a picture of her. I'll show you a picture of her. That detective in Seattle sent me a picture of her. Here. See? Huh? That's exactly what she looks like.
The photos from the restaurant.
This is a picture of someone's back.
Well, it's her, and he was crazy about her. What's this? This is from Seattle.
Becky turns away quickly and folds up Annie's raincoat as Annie tears open the letter.
Becky?
So I mailed your letter.
Annie's open-mouthed.
Dear Annie, thanks for your letter. It was great. You sound neat.
Annie shoots Becky a look.
We're very excited about meeting you in New York on Valentine's Day and seeing if we are MFEO. See you soon. Sleepless in Seattle.
MFEO?
Annie almost can't bring herself to say it.
Made for each other.
It's cute. It's like a little clue.
Annie screws up the letter and throws it over her shoulder.
So he can't write. Big deal. Verbal ability is a highly overrated thing in a guy, and our pathetic need for it is what gets us into so much trouble.
I'm going to run back to Walter's arms if he'll still have me.
What about the letter?
It means nothing. It was written before I went out there. Before the hoe.
Annie grabs a mug and a tea bag and sinks onto a chair.
The only thing is, she didn't look like a hoe. She looked like somebody we would have been friends with.
Sam, Susie, and Greg around the dinner table.
You saw her in the airport and then here?
And I tried to talk to her. It was like I knew her or something. It was weird.
You mean like a deja vu thing?
It was a very French deja vu-ish kind of thing. Oui.
At least you're out there seeing people again. That's terrific.
Well, I mean, there's really just the one.
Victoria.
Jonah on the sofa.
You don't like Victoria?
She laughs like a hyena.
Is this true?
No. Sort of, yeah. A little bit, but, you know. Hey, tell them what you did.
Dad.
Tell them about the radio show. Go ahead.
Dad.
I want to hear it. Go ahead. Tell them. Christmas Eve, he phones in one of those radio call-in shows, tells them, I need a new wife.
Oh, you're kidding. That's so sweet.
Now he's obsessed with this one woman who wrote me.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she wants to meet me at the top of the Empire State Building.
On Valentine's Day.
Oh, it's like that movie.
What movie?
An Affair to Remember. Did you ever see it? Oh, God. Cary Grant and Deborah Carr. Is it Carr or Kerr?
Carr.
Okay. She's going to meet him at the top of the Empire State Building. Only she got hit by a taxi. And he waited and waited. And it was raining, I think. And then she's too proud to tell him that she's, crippled. And he's too proud to find out why she doesn't come. But he comes to see her anyway. I forget why, but oh. Oh, it's so amazing when he comes to see her. Because he doesn't even notice that she doesn't get up to say hello. And he's very bitter. And you think that he's just gonna walk out the door and never know why. She's just lying there, you know, like on the couch with this blanket over her shriveled little legs. And
well, you all right?
She's fine.
And suddenly he goes, I saw the painting. And he like goes to the bedroom and he looks and he comes out and he looks at her and he kind of just, they know. And then they hug and it's,
that's a chick's movie.
I would say so. What kind of a person would write to someone they heard on the radio?
Oh, I got hundreds of letters from women all over the country.
Desperate women.
Just because someone is looking for a nice guy, it doesn't make them desperate.
How about rapacious and love-starved?
No.
It is easier to be killed by a terrorist than to find a husband after the
age of 40. That is absolutely untrue.
Right, honey. Right.
Well, I'm not looking for a mail-order bride. I just want somebody that I can have a decent conversation with. Over dinner, you know, without it falling down into weepy tears over some movie that
she's
you just saw.
Very emotional.
Although I cried at the end of The Dirty Dozen.
Well, who didn't?
Because Jim Brown was throwing these hand grenades down these air shafts, and Richard Jekyll and Lee Marvin were sitting on top of this armored personnel carrier that dressed up like Nazis.
Oh, yes.
Trini Lopez.
Trini Lopez.
He busted his neck when they were parachuting down behind the Nazi lines.
Stop it.
Richard Jekyll, at the beginning, he had on his shiny helmet because he was a hippie.
Please, no more. Oh, God, I love that movie.
Susie smiles. Jessica's watching the moment in An Affair to Remember when the camera pans up the Empire State Building. Jonah's playing a Game Boy.
This is the best movie I've ever seen in my life.
What's so great about it? You have to find her, Jonah. You have to go to her.
Do you know how much money it costs to go to New York?
Nobody knows. It changes practically every day. How much money do you have?
$80.
I have $42 that will probably cover taxi cabs.
But how would I get there?
Really? I have to run these tickets over to someone. Can you keep an eye on things up front till I get back?
Sure, Mom.
Jessica uses her mum's computer to book a plane ticket to New York on the 14th of February. She types in the name Baldwin stroke Jonah.
Do you want a window seat or an aisle?
Window.
Do you want a food plate?
I don't know. Do I?
I'd rather die than eat airplane food. I'm telling them you're 12 so you can fly unaccompanied and the stewardess won't carry you around and stuff like that.
Are you crazy? Who'd believe I'm 12?
If it's in the computer, they believe anything.
Are you sure?
Do you want me to say that you're really, really short for your age and that they shouldn't say anything because it would hurt your feelings?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Sometimes it's hard. A Valentine's display in a shop window shows a loving couple in silhouette. Annie breezes out of her front door and finds a red envelope in the mailbox. She reads the card, beams, and clasps it to her chest.
Walter.
Becky and Annie at work.
You're gonna miss the train.
No, I'm not. I'm so happy, Becky. Finally, I feel happy. This is right. This is real. Everything else is what happens when you watch too many movies and you completely lose sight of what counts. Please, don't tell anybody what happened, because I would be so absolutely mortified if anyone knew I did anything even remotely close to what I've done. Thank you. Do you promise?
I promise.
Sleepless in Seattle is history.
The lift doors close. Annie pulls up in a yellow taxi cab outside the Plaza Hotel in New York. A doorman unloads her luggage as Annie runs up a red carpet into reception. She rushes up the corridor and knocks on room 608. Walter opens the door. Champagne is on ice and the room is full of roses. She falls into his arms. Annie and Walter standing outside a window display at Tiffany's.
Go ahead. You go.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say that ever since Christmas, you've been different, kind of distracted, distant, but now... feels as if you're coming back from wherever you were.
I am. I was just... I think I got nervous. You know, but that's normal, right? I mean, don't you ever feel nervous about... you know...
What?
Forever.
No.
Well,
they go in.
I did, and you know what I think? I think I thought it was too perfect, you know? I started to wonder if we were the human equivalent of two rights making a wrong. You know what it was? It was like kismet, but not, if you see what I mean. You have to grow up. You just can't keep having all these adolescent fantasies about how exciting your life is going to be. Don't hate me, but I love this pattern.
You couldn't.
I do.
This is just like my grandmother's china.
How many place settings should I put down?
10.
They smile at one another.
Exactly. Mm. 8 is too few. 12 is too many.
Too many.
Yeah. Annie's in the jewelry department, leaning against a glass counter. Walter pulls a wrapped gift box from a Tiffany's bag and lays it in front of her. Annie shakes her head, marvelling at him. She unwraps a velvet ring box. Inside it, a classic flower-shaped diamond engagement ring. Annie's taken aback.
Walter.
It was my mother's. I had them size it down. She had really fat fingers.
So beautiful.
It's exactly what I would pick out if I had every ring in the whole world to choose from. You see what I mean? There are people who would like a relationship to be full of surprises, but I am not one of those people. No, siree. Surprises are highly overrated.
They leave the store.
I'm leaving first thing in the morning, but I'm only going to be gone one night. And Clarice is going to be here, so you'll be able to see plenty of Geraldo and Nightmare on Elm Street 12. I will never know.
Are you going with her?
I'm going with Victoria, yes.
Jonah stomps off.
And don't try anything tricky, understand? Don't go rolling in poison ivy as soon as I leave the house. Or lock yourself in a closet or do anything that makes you need stitches. If your finger falls off, it's staying off. No one's going to pack it on ice and take it to the hospital so you can be a breakthrough in laser surgery. Is this about that woman in Baltimore?
Annie.
Sam marches away to pack.
I don't care what you do!
Good, fine! Tell you what I'm doing this weekend. I'm getting laid. 1990s and nobody is getting laid. I'm the only man in America who was getting laid this weekend, and I haven't been laid that much. Six girls in college, maybe seven. How long have you been standing there?
Forever.
What did you hear me just say?
Six girls in college, maybe seven.
Seven? Eight! Mary Kelly!
This is the one I like.
Jonah holds up Annie's letter.
Jonah, the fact is, you're not going to like any woman because it isn't your mother.
How do you know? What's wrong with Annie?
Oh, Jonah, shut up!
Shut up? Shut up? Mom never said shut up to me. Mom never yelled at me.
The conversation is finished.
Why can't we go to New York?
There is no way that we are going on a plane to meet some woman who could be a crazy, sick lunatic. Didn't you see Fatal Attraction?
You wouldn't let me.
Well, I saw it. And it scared the shit out of me. It scared the shit out of every man in America.
I'm not leaving till you say yes.
Sam shuts his bedroom doors in Jonah's face.
I hate you, I hate you, I hate you!
That's good. You'll have a lot to tell Oprah how your dad destroyed your life because he had to go out for a weekend special at the Holiday Inn.
Clarice strolls down the wooden jetty to Sam's house. She's tall, beanpole skinny, and sports eccentrically fashionable clothes. She knocks on the door.
Jonah, Clarice is here, and I gotta go.
Sam looks in Jonah's room.
Hey, Jonah. Jonah?
Sam tries another room.
All right, Jonah, listen, I gotta go. Jonah!
Sam runs downstairs.
Hey, Jonah!
Sam heads out of the house.
Jonah! Jonah!
He runs frantically around the deck.
Jonah!
He notices Jonah's bicycle and runs on. Clarice is waiting on the jetty. Jessica is questioned by Sam and her parents.
Jessica, honey, you have to tell us where he is. Jonah's daddy is very upset.
She rolls her eyes.
Jessica, this is your father. Tell us where he is. Right this minute.
Jessica looks up at her father in his dressing gown.
N-Y.
What is that?
No way. That's N-W.
New York. He's on his way to New York.
What?
How?
United 597.
Jessica.
When does it leave?
7:30.
Jonah's flight path east is shown arching over the colourful map. On the plane...
Here you go. Here's a nice pin for you for flying with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Can I take this for you?
No.
Jonah clings onto his Seattle Mariners rucksack. A second arc of light across the map delineates Sam's later flight following Jonah. Jonah follows some grown-ups out of the arrivals lounge and queues for a taxi.
Empire State Building.
Oh, Empire State Building. Get a little further away from the curb next time, Mac.
The taxi drops Jonah off.
There it is. What you gonna do when you get up there? Spit off the top?
No. I'm going to meet my new mother.
Jonah marches through the Art Deco lobby, a metal relief sculpture of a glowing Empire State Building dominating the marble wall behind the information desk at the end. Jonah follows arrows for the observation deck. On the 86th floor, he steps out onto the open-air promenade and approaches a young woman looking through a set of mounted binoculars.
Excuse me, I'm Jonah. Are you Annie?
No, I'm Cynthia.
Jonah crosses the deck to another woman looking out at the view and tugs at her jacket.
Excuse me, are you Annie?
She shakes her head and Jonah walks on. A view of the Empire State Building from above shows Jonah as a little speck in his red anorak, walking around the observation deck on the 86th floor, and pulls away to show the building rising in stately tiers to its 103rd floor, crowned by the tall television mast on top, and a panoramic view of the city below, the Hudson River glinting in the distance. In the Rainbow Grill, Walter and Annie are shown to a table by the window, opposite the Empire State Building.
Table, thanks.
Annie's disturbed by the view.
Something wrong?
Can I get you a drink?
Some champagne?
Fine, fine.
Can we have a bottle of Dom DeLuise?
Annie glances up at the waiter.
Just kidding.
Oh, it was a joke. He meant Dom Perignon.
I got it.
The waiter leaves.
Oof, beautiful view, isn't it?
Walter, there's something I have to tell you.
Sam fidgets in his seat on the plane. His flight to New York is shown as a string of lights arching over the colourful map of the states, which disappears like a roller map. Sam dashes out of the airport and jumps the taxi queue. Sam speeds off in the back of a yellow cab which trundles along one of the outer roadways on the lower level of the Queensboro Bridge, crossing the East River and heading for Manhattan. The setting sun illuminates the Empire State Building, towering in the distance. Jonah is still waiting on the observation deck on the 86th floor. The sky has darkened and lights twinkle in the city below. A brisk wind ruffles his hair as he balances on one of the old-fashioned sets of mounted binoculars, looking forlornly around at sightseers moving about the promenade. He climbs off the viewing stand, puts his rucksack on the floor and slumps down next to it with his back to the wall. He looks sadly this way and that and heaves a big sigh, a little boy alone in the big city. In the Rainbow Grill on the 65th floor of the Rockefeller Plaza, Annie and Walter's glasses of champagne remain untouched. Outside the window, the Empire State Building is lit up in shafts of cool blue light.
So, he could be on top of the Empire State Building now?
No. I guess he could be. No. It's not him, Walter. It's me. I can't do this.
Look, Annie, I love you, but let's leave that out of this. I don't want to be someone that you're settling for. I don't want to be someone that anyone settles for. Marriage is hard enough without bringing such low expectations into it, isn't it?
Walter, I don't deserve you.
No, I wouldn't put it that way. But, okay.
Annie laughs and shakes her head, then hands Walter back his engagement ring. Walter stares at it for a moment, then puts it away in his breast pocket. Annie gazes at him with her greeny blue eyes.
You okay?
Yeah.
Annie turns to the window and gasps.
Look.
The Empire State Building has lit up with a big red love heart.
It's a sign.
Who needed a sign?
Walter, I have to go.
Annie dashes out of the Rockefeller Plaza and hails a yellow taxi cab. At the Empire State Building, Sam runs out of a lift onto the 86th floor.
Jonah! Jonah!
Dad!
Jonah!
Jonah runs over to Sam, who scoops him up in the tightest of embraces, hugging his son to him as if he'll never, ever let him go again.
What if something had happened to you? What if I couldn't get to you?
I'm sorry.
Sam puts Jonah down and kneels beside him.
What I done, huh? You are my family. You're all I've got.
I thought she'd be here. I thought she'd come.
We're doing okay, aren't we? I mean, are we okay? Are we all right? I mean, so far, have I done anything really stupid?
No.
Have I screwed it up for the both of us?
No.
Sam hugs the little boy.
Oh.
Annie's taxi is stuck in traffic. She pays the driver and jumps out, running down the pavement past lit store windows towards the entrance to the Empire State Building, her soft grey-blue scarf ruffling in the breeze. She runs on, clipping along steadily in her elegant black heels, dodging pedestrians on the dark pavements and running past parked lorries and Valentine's Day window displays. She runs across a road and through revolving doors into the marble lobby. A grey-haired guard wearing a peaked cap is standing at the information desk.
Observation deck?
Sorry, ma'am, but it's too late.
Oh, no, please, I really need to get up there.
We're closing up, no more runs tonight.
Annie looks around wildly, then leans on the desk.
Listen, can I just take a look? There's someone I was supposed to meet. He's probably not there, but if I don't at least look, I'll always wonder about it.
Cary Grant, right?
You know that movie?
One of my wife's favorites.
Annie runs for the lift. On the observation deck, Sam and Jonah climb into a lift going down.
Maybe when we get home, we'll get a dog.
Okay.
What do you mean, okay? Wouldn't you like to have a dog?
Sure.
The last people on the deck get into the lift and the doors close. Annie comes out of the other lift, followed by a craggy-faced lift operator.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Empty.
Can I take a minute?
Go ahead.
Annie walks out of the glass pavilion onto the observation deck. She buries her hands in the pockets of her soft aubergine coat, sighs and looks up at the sky. She walks out onto the promenade, hugging her arms around herself to fend off the breeze, and stops near one of the mounted pairs of high-powered binoculars, looking out through the criss-crossed railings for a glimpse of the city by night. Suddenly, she catches sight of Jonah's Seattle Mariners rucksack on the floor near the wall. Annie glances over her shoulder and bends down to pick it up. She balances it on the wall and takes a look inside. She pulls Jonah's teddy bear out and turns round just as Jonah and Sam come looking for it.
I left it by the telescopes.
Sam and Jonah are stopped in their tracks by the vision of Annie holding Howard in the rucksack. A flash of recognition passes over Sam's face as he and Annie gaze at one another. Annie walks towards them, holding Howard to her breast, the rucksack down by her side. Sam and Jonah move forward to meet her. Sam and Annie can't tear their eyes away from each other.
It's you.
It's me.
I saw you in the street.
Are you Annie?
Annie smiles down at Jonah.
Yes.
Jonah beams. Sam's amazed.
You're Annie?
Annie holds up Howard.
This must be yours.
I'm Jonah. This is my dad. His name's Sam.
Hi, Jonah.
She gazes joyfully at Sam.
Sam.
Sam gives a lopsided smile.
And who's this?
Howard.
Oh, Howard. Hello, Howard.
She hands Howard to Jonah and gazes back at Sam. The lift operator is waiting. Sam glances over his shoulder at him, then looks back at Annie.
We better go.
Annie smiles unsurely.
Shall we?
Sam holds out his hand. Annie's lips curve into a joyful smile as she places her hand in his. Sam folds his hand around hers, exerting a soft pressure with his thumb. Annie can't take her eyes off Sam as he escorts her to the lift, following Jonah. Sam stares at the beautiful woman by his side as they walk into the glass pavilion and get into the lift with Jonah.
It's so important to make someone happy. Make just one someone happy.
Annie shoots wondering looks at Sam, her face radiant and elated.
You sing
Sam.
To one.
It's nice to meet you.
Smile that cheers you.
Jonah's smile lights up his face as the lift doors close. The emblem on the silver lift doors, the silhouette of a glowing Empire State Building, turns into the real thing, towering over the glittering lights of Manhattan with a big red love heart lit up on all four of its sides.
In a minute, where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer.
The lights of Manhattan Island recede into the distance, pulling other spots of glittering light in from the vast space-like darkness to form the shape of the United States.
Make someone happy.
Shooting stars fly up from points on the glittering map of light and turn into stars.
We'll be happy too.
The end. ITFC audio description by Lonnie Evans.